It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And if my teeth are still chattering over the air, it's because I think they're still chattering in reality. And no, it's not from enjoying the beautiful summer weather we've had the past few days in Chicago, or part of this week at least. It is from being in Greenland. Last week, when I signed off, I said I'd be talking to you from Greenland. Well, the good news is I've been to Greenland and back, and now I'm back in Chicago. So I'm going to spend some time this morning, maybe most of the show, talking about an incredible place that I had the pleasure of visiting in the past few days. Of course, those of you in Chicago were playing golf while I was wearing everything that I owned and then some. So let me take you back to the beginning. Several months ago, Chris Dorsey, who you've heard on the air many times here with me on WGN Radio, called me and said that he was doing a Sporting Classics television show, which he's done for many years, and I've had the pleasure of doing some with him in some great locations around the world. He was doing a show in Greenland on eider hunting, and would I like to come? Well, that would be like asking a kid how much candy he would like. The answer was, of course I want to come. That was just the beginning of the expedition. So the planning of a trip, I often say, is the most fun adventure. The actual living of a trip sometimes is anticlimactic. This wasn't anticlimactic, but the lead up to it was very much the kind of thing you have when you're getting ready to go to the Arctic Circle, and you're getting ready to go to the Arctic Circle in March. So how do you get to Greenland? You actually go straight north from Chicago. It's rather remarkable. Greenland, when you think of the globe, is pretty much north of Chicago and a little bit east. So we transported to Kangerlussuaq, which is a long runway and an outpost somewhere on the west coast of Greenland, after having flown up over Hudson Bay and Bay of Labrador and ice everywhere. And we land in Kangerlussuaq, and we go through customs in a trailer. I don't know what the population of Kangerlussuaq is officially, but it can't be more than a couple hundred people. And why they're there is to service airplanes and occasionally take someone on a muskox hunt, which a member of our crew, Steve Ferris, who you may remember from the band Mr. Mister, he decided he wanted to shoot a muskox before we got there. So we met him in Kangerlussuaq. He had the woolly mammoth with him. We then went through customs in a trailer, and then we got on a prop plane and we flew down to Nuuk, which is in the southern, southwestern part of Greenland. It's the largest metropolis in Greenland. I think there are 58,000 people in all of Greenland. Most of them live in Nuuk. Nuuk has a small runway, which is about to change. And when I end this show, I'll talk about how Greenland is about to change in an enormous way, and in a way that I guess I would have to say is not for the better, but we'll get there. So we land in Nuuk. It is light about 13 hours a day there now. It's gaining light every day, but it doesn't really matter because everything's white. When it's dark at night, it's still white. The ground is white. There's ice everywhere. For 5 days, actually six, never saw a tree. Never saw anything green, never saw anything that resembled bare ground. All I saw was ice and glaciers. We stayed in a lovely hotel in the town of Nuuk, and everything in Nuuk is brought in from elsewhere, primarily from Denmark, Greenland being a territory of Denmark. All the food comes from Denmark. There's nothing manufactured in Greenland. I don't even think there's a cement plant in Greenland. Everything comes in by boat or by plane, primarily by boat. I expected to see a little bit like Iceland, expected to see small houses and multicolored hamlets. And no, not that at all. Everything in Nuuk is made somewhere else and assembled there. The buildings, four, five, six-story apartment buildings, all multicolored. And you have to realize these folks are living basically at the Arctic Circle or close to it all year, and there's not a lot of summer. There's not a lot of daylight. The winters can be long. The roads, I assume they were paved. We had no idea because we drove on ice the entire time. And there are definitely some hills in Nook, and everything is ice and snow covered. But the purpose of our going was, of course, to go see if we could shoot a king eider in one of the many fjords that surrounds Nook. We didn't go out into the open ocean. That's apparently where most of the eiders are. But the drive from the hotel to the pier, where our 38-foot, made me think of Gilligan's Island and the Skipper 2, where the minnow would be lost, was sitting frozen in ice. The entire harbor is ice, except for where the ships come in and break it in and out. And there is our minnow, 38 feet with a cabin, center cabin, in which you stayed inside and tried to stay warm. And then it had a bench in the bow, which is where you, I called it being put in the barrel, which is where you sat when you attempted to shoot a king eider. But before I get there, I want to say the people of Greenland were incredibly friendly. Everywhere you went, and maybe it's because there aren't a lot of tourists yet, the hotel friendly, the food was absolutely excellent. And we ate eider, we ate muskox, we ate fish, we ate things that were caught or shot locally. They in Greenland, you are able to take a duck and sell it in a restaurant. Now, you can't do that in the United States. We did have wonderful blueberries every morning. They didn't come from Greenland. But the hospitality was wonderful, all elements, from the airport to the hotel, on down to the guide who took us out in the boats. The Greenlandics were incredibly friendly towards us. A few highlights about driving from the hotel to Greenland. First of all, the thing that struck me the most was clotheslines hanging out to dry with clothes on them. Of course, the clothes trying to dry, the clotheslines were frozen. It's zero or below zero, and here are clothes blowing in the Arctic wind drying. That struck me as something I never expected to see in Greenland. Just as in America, joggers, only there are no sidewalks and no parks. They jog on the road with you, and the joggers are wearing cleats on their shoes. That's not a surprise. A big surprise was I had the joy of watching a baby stroller, a two-baby stroller being, everything moves on the same road, being rolled on the road. Only the baby stroller had little chains on the tires so that the baby stroller could be pushed or not slip sideways. This is real winter country, and you don't see snow plows. You see huge caterpillars that move snow. So a snow plowing truck would be relatively useless, and they've got chains on them. So you arrive at the harbor, as we did each morning at 10 o'clock. Great breakfast, and we meet at the boat, and there are five of us on the boat, plus the guide, plus a spotter. And the spotter is a really important person, because the way you hunt eider in Greenland is with a pair of binoculars. And the spotter would look out over the sea, and by the way, this is not a calm sea. This is a turbulent sea. Sometimes 3 to 4 foot waves, and I'll get when I come back from the break about what it feels like to get hit with the North Atlantic in March, fresh in the face with a roller that crests over the top of the bow while you're trying to swing and shoot on an eider. You leave the harbor and you leave everything behind. You have left civilization. You know you are on the edge. There's no one coming to get you if you have a problem. You would probably survive just moments, if that, if you fell out of the boat, if something happened. You're on your own, and you hope the boat doesn't leak, and you know the captain has done an incredible job of preparing for this, because after all, it's his life too. So you leave the harbor, and you motor out into the bays that are near the town of Nook. And Nook, by the way, there are no smokestacks. Nook is in our view, it's a beautifully colored town, but it's not a city. But yet, it's the metropolis. It's the heartbeat of where everything comes into Greenland. And when I come back from the break, I'm going to describe what it's like to spend a day, actually a week, on the water in Greenland, and how it's one of the experiences I'll never forget. And then when I end the show, I'm going to talk about why change is coming to Greenland. And in my view, sadly so. Be back with more on Greenland in just a moment. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here, and welcome back to a visit to Greenland. Before I took the break, I'd tell you what it's like to actually leave the harbor and go out in search of king eider. And there are only a couple places in the world where king eider can be seen, Greenland being one of them, off the northwest coast of Alaska being the other. Greenland's a little bit easier to get to than John's Island off of Alaska. And as bad as the weather can be, it's still more dependable. So our group of five headed out into the fjords off of Nuuk with Captain Eric at the helm. Did a fantastic job at the helm guiding our boat, and his assistant, who had eagle eyes on her. She could spot an eider duck with binoculars where we couldn't even see them if we had a telescope. And with her naked eyes, she was spotting eiders, king eiders, and telling us males and females that we could barely see with our binoculars. She was awesome, and Captain Eric just did an incredible job, and he's a seasoned veteran of the seas of Greenland and of hunting of Greenland and taking tours. So essentially, you could say it was ecotourism, only we had shotguns and we were in pursuit of a king eider. And the king eider is not a duck you're going to shoot many of. They are one of the world's trophy species. We each hoped to shoot a couple of males. We were successful. Chris Dorsey, who's one of the best shots I'll ever be around, he was successful, as were we all, actually, in navigating a rolling sea. So you would be inside the cabin until it was your time, as I said, to be in the barrel. And then you would put on everything you own, cover every extremity, and that wasn't even enough. And you'd have little slits for your eyes that were, you know, that the rest of your face, everything was covered. You had gloves on, and you would throw your glove off or your mittens off to shoot. Other than that, you kept everything covered. You had electric socks on. I wore waders because waders, after all, are dry, and it's plenty wet, even though it's not supposed to be, but the seas can be calm. And in a moment, you're suddenly turning a corner and you're sitting in the bow of this boat on a bench, and it's 5 degrees above zero and it's blowing 30 miles an hour and you are in 3-foot seas. And the next thing you know, here comes a bucket full of North Atlantic water and hits you squarely in the face. You try to turn your face, hits you squarely in the side of the face. And I can tell you two things about that. One is it's really salty. And the second is I think it froze from the time it got out of the water till it hit me just a few feet away. I actually think it turned to ice. So you're bobbing up and down and you've spotted a flock of eiders off in the distance, maybe half a mile, maybe more. And Captain Eric maneuvers this 38-foot floating iceberg. That's what you kind of, it's all white, got a beautiful glass interior where you're all sitting nice and warm until it's your turn to be out on the bow. And then he maneuvers the boat so that you get above the eiders and you're drifting down on the eider ducks. And you're drifting towards, it could be a pair, it could be a small flock. We didn't see the big flocks of ducks that I expected to see. We're told that there could be as many as 1 million eiders well off the coast of Greenland out on the ocean. We didn't have a chance to see those, and I'm very glad we didn't. We were never without the sight of land. We were always in sight of land, comforting as it might be, but the land was completely uninhabited. So there was a glacier waiting for us if something happened, but the reality is you weren't going to climb on the glaciers. Its sides are steep. If the boat went down, you were going down. If you fell out of the boat, your chances of being retrieved were slim. So you would blow down, drift down on these ducks, rolling in the sea. Most of them got up 100 or more yards away from you and would never give you a shot. Every so often, one would stay longer, or a small group would stay longer, and you would be within shooting range, and shooting range would be 50 to 60 yards, seldom closer, and they would take off the water, and you would try to shoot them as they went by you. Now, imagine you can't stand up because, well, you try. Some people were more successful than me. You stand up, the bottom of the deck of the boat is all ice. It's had salt spray on it. It's frozen. It hasn't thawed out probably since last August, maybe September. There's ice on the bottom of the deck. So you're standing on ice. And then you're rolling in a sea, and you get a wave, and you're trying to stand up, and you're trying to shoot a duck that's moving a whole lot faster than you can realize, going by you, left to right or right to left, depending on which side of the boat you're on. And you try to shoot. It's very, very hard. I decided the best way to shoot was sitting down, so that when the boat went up, at least I stayed seated. A couple times I stood shooting up and I shot, and the next thing I realized, I was sitting on the bench behind me after the gun had gone off. I did manage to shoot in this trip. I managed to shoot two spectacular king eiders and an equally spectacular common eider. Common eiders can be shot elsewhere in North America. King eiders only in Alaska. It was in the elements, and I cannot stress strongly enough how wicked cold the elements were. You took your glove off or your mitten off to shoot. You pulled the trigger, and before you could reload your gun, your hand was cold. You had no part of your face exposed, and you're sitting there listening to the show thinking, oh, this sounds like a lot of fun. It was an experience. It was an experience that once you've done it, I think you can say, I have been to one of the most incredible places on earth. I have seen one of the greatest species of waterfowl, one of the hardest, hardiest, and most beautiful species of waterfowl. It's not something you're going to do every day. It takes a long time to get there, and it literally is you are on the edge. So when Chris Dorsey's Sporting Classics television show comes out, you'll be able to see it in real life, what I'm describing on the air. It was epic. And with the minute I have left in the show, I simply want to say, I think I saw a nook as it will never be seen again, because in 2 months, they are opening a runway that will allow jets from around the world to land in Nook. That's never happened before. Here comes quote-unquote ecotourism. Here comes the Disney Cruise Line. Here come all the things that happen when you open up a society to the world. And people may not go there in the winter. They won't go there in March. But I have a terrible feeling tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people are going to start coming to Nook in the summer to experience Greenland. Greenland's not ready for it. The country has no infrastructure for it. And when you think of places like Juneau, Alaska, where over 1 million people get off cruise boats, I can't imagine that happening to this beautiful, beautiful town called Nook. But it's coming. Commercialism is coming to Greenland. I'm very glad I went to see it. While still gripped in the depths of winter, I can feel my fingers, I can feel my toes. Yes, my teeth have stopped chattering to some extent. I'll never forget my trip to the far north, Greenland. It's a place that I do recommend going if you ever have the chance. It's spectacular. Thanks for listening. I'll be back with much more on the great outdoors next week, and we'll try something warmer. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.